Welcome, everyone, to Leagues HQ, a Basketball Toya podcast. Ted West here. We have Sarah in the building. Next to her is Greg. How are we going, guys? Welcome.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks for having us back.
G'day, Ted. Great to be with you.
Absolutely. We got finals time across the board in CBL. We had some grand finals over the weekend at Bendigo, but we also had three conferences in men and women beginning their finals. We had 1v4 and 2v3 crossovers. Some fantastic games. We had overtimes. We had double overtimes. We had 1-point wins. We had a few blowouts. It was a weekend to definitely dive into, which is exactly what we're going to do here today. Starting off with our Gippsland region, Gippsland men, we had Warrigal taking down Traralgon 117-86. A massive, massive effort from both teams here, but Warrigal, I think, were the clear standouts here. 70 points in the second half. I think that sort of says it all, doesn't it, Greg?
Certainly does, Ted. And when you see 2 minutes into the third quarter, we scores of 51 apiece. So to see it get out to 117-86 speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Warrigal scored 31 to the T-Birds, 14 to finish that third quarter. I think that's incredible in itself.
And of course, yeah, you're right. But let's also, two very, very good sides. The Warrigal side, look, they're working towards bigger things as an association, which is exciting. And Traralgon have long been a power and forever will be a power in the Gippsland region.
Yep.
It is a great result for Warrigal. Some outstanding players. Riley Morhu, top scoring for the evening, 35 points. Massive influence.
Yeah, absolutely. He played Gippsland men in Big V this year, a youth league player, but he played a number of games in their seniors. He actually contributed quite well in their grand final game. Unfortunately, they did lose. But no, an upcoming talent. He's a SDP, MPP player through his junior. So scoring 35 in CBL is massive for him. But then, no, you said Traralgon were fantastic, and they were. Isaac Pizzina and Cody Tibbles, the sort of duo that everyone looked at the entire season, 32 and 24 points respectively. They deserve so much credit. They've been there the entire year. They've been there for a number of years. So, no, respect given to them for sure.
Yeah, I think a bit of a shock to the system having to lose that one, and for Warrigal to do so, you know, what appears to be comfortably in that second half. But a strong program, Traralgon, full credit to Warrigal, and, of course, playing for the Gippsland Finance Solutions Championship. The sponsors of this Gippsland Conference of Country Basketball League.
Yeah, absolutely. We jump to our other game, Sarah. We had Pakenham who defeated Mafra 71-58.
No, you're right, Ted, and this was a much, much closer game. Pakenham, credit to them for getting the win, but we also know Mafra were missing a couple of players.
Yes.
So there was a bit of a wedding going on Saturday night back in Melbourne that saw a few of their boys, key players, missing for this matchup.
Okay.
On the Sunday against Pakenham. And Pakenham, full credit to them for getting it done, particularly in that last quarter and stretching the lead to get the win.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there wasn't much to it in the first half. You know, Pakenham were sort of on their back foot in the first, but 100% creeping it back in the second, that 24-19 second quarter. The last three possessions were crucial, I think, for them. But no, the late run in the fourth, 8 points straight, I believe it was. I think that's where the celebrations properly started for Pakenham. Mafra, again, had a fantastic season, as you said, with just a few guys missing in what was an unfortunate but gracious event. I'm sure they had an awesome time.
Yeah, another great battle between, obviously, Pakenham and Mafra. Pakenham has definitely been sort of the gold standard with Traralgon throughout the whole season. As we were talking about last week, both had only lost the one game each. So we knew they were always going to put on a show and really try and win their way through to the grand final. And Mafra, I know we talked about them probably missing a couple of keys players, including Sam Whelan, who's obviously been big for Mafra throughout the season as well. But I think they put in a really great effort, all things considered as well, and definitely made Pakenham earn it. They didn't just sort of lay down and let them run over them. They really made them earn it until the final whistle.
Mm. Well, I think what's interesting is this Pakenham unit have played together for a number of years. I mean, you got Jared Small and Aaron Small brothers who've been playing juniors together. Cooper Lanting has also been in that age group, having all the time together in youth league, 20s, juniors, everything like that. And then you throw in Matt McKirk, who's a champ men player in their Pakenham side. Like, this is a group that's been together consistently during entire years. So a lot of culture there, a team that knows how to play with each other, a very defensively mindsetted team, which I think is going to be really interesting as we move to this grand final matchup of Warragul and Pakenham. It's almost offense versus defense.
Yeah, I was having a look, typing up some head-to-heads and things to go out on our socials and whatnot, and that was probably the biggest thing that stood out to me, was that Warragul's average four was well over the hundreds, and then Pakenham were definitely the team who had been locking down in defense with their average super low in that respect as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you look at some matchups here, and you got Riley Moore, who's extremely talented, that you would probably suspect, I think, Jared Small was going to match up with him. Jared Small was, you know, one of the best defenders in the Big V competition this year. So expect those two to come against each other. Warragul, do they have the bigs to sort of match up against Pakenham? I'm not too sure. Matt McKirk's, you know, a massive, massive guy. He can stretch the floor and definitely play in the rim, and his pick and roll game is second to none as well. But no, this is going to be a fantastic game. I am curious, though, because Warragul are technically the number one team here, and it's being played at Pakenham, correct?
Yes, you are correct.
So then who's got the main bench? Do Warragul take the main bench, seeing that they're the top seed, or do Pakenham take their own bench?
It's a really good question, Ted.
It's tough, isn't it? It's hard. It is hard, but that's your grand final. Warragul versus Pakenham is going to be a fantastic game. Down to continue life as we jump to our women's side, Gippsland women. It was Warragul who defeated Morwell 81-70, Sarah.
Yeah, another cracker. Morwell definitely had been coming into some really good form late in the season, as we'd talked about, really won their way through to the semi in the first place. So you knew they were sort of hitting some really good form that were definitely going to be able to take it to a very good Warragul team. As we've mentioned on multiple occasions, they've been undefeated so far throughout the season. So they definitely did take it to them. I think 11's really close and really showed how Morwell's developed throughout the season.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Traralgon probably controlled the game for majority of it. Morwell had to call some timeouts throughout that second and third to just slow down some runs. I'm sure they made some substitutions throughout it, but really having to take that timeout and try and take control and get on a run themselves. Sky Reeves to continue to put on a scoring display throughout the game. Six of their last eight in the fourth was fantastic. She finished with 33 for the game. It was fantastic to see. Emily Schultz with 24 leading Morwell. But again, just a little too late there. As we jump to our other game, Maui just got over the line, 70, defeating Currumburra 69. Now, Sarah and I were just chatting off comms, off this podcast just before. I believe this went to a double overtime.
Yeah, from what we can see, in Play HQ, there was a lot of sort of 0 minutes in the play-by-play, which confused me and Ted slightly when we were having sort of writing our previews and things to be able to discuss, but it's probably not a rare thing. But then, however, sort of scrolling through socials and things, we're able to see that Currumburra had put up a post, obviously congratulating their team for the fight they were able to do throughout the whole season, but obviously in this very tight game against a very good Moe side, and had also mentioned that this game went into double overtime, which when we're looking at play-by-plays, it kind of fits that mould as well, where we look at where the timing sort of ran into the zero. So would have been great to be able to see sort of where it's separated between overtime, but also amazing that we were able to then find the knowledge and find out that this cracker of a match has gone even further with the double overtime as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you try and dive into it as best as we can here, and you got Alana Arneson, who was the one who tied it to put it to your first overtime by the looks of it. 52 a piece there, and then you go all the way to your probably your next tie of 63 a piece, where it was Moe who were behind it, and that got it to that double overtime. So a fantastic effort from both sides. It is sort of hard to see what happens here, but Caitlin finishing with 23 points to lead all scorers. Alana Arneson with 19 of her own, just falling short. They put out a post. They were very, very proud of their girls, of the season that they had and the way they played. So fantastic job by both teams. Currumburra just falling ever so short there. Such a tough defeat, falling short by one in the semi-final.
Yeah, it's just this conference, especially the top four, really, as we were talking about, it was that battle to the fourth spot between Morwell and Packenham. But even, you know, Currumburra had been battling Moe for that second and third spot. And then we saw how close they are in this match as well. So I think that's really given credit to this conference and really showed how tight it is in the Gippsland region and how many great players that we have in there. So I think the scores from this has really done credit to them.
Absolutely. Moving to the grand final matchup this weekend, also at Pakenham Cardinia Live. You have Warragul versus Moe. A few sort of questions and points that I can sort of see here is who's stopping Sky Rees and who's stopping Samantha Labaros from Warragul, two of the best players in this conference playing together. It's going to be so hard for Moe to be able to stop them. Lauren King-Church, though, has to be huge, and I think she will be huge. Got a lot to be done there, but then I think my third sort of key here is to firstly run Warragul off the three-point line, but then find a way to limit and take away your fouls. Like, yeah. Foul discipline has to be big here.
Yeah, you'd been mentioning how often Warragul were getting to the foul line, and I think that's obviously been big, as you were talking about. You've talked about how many times they've sort of had what we assume are foul shots with the 1 point, and how they were higher than everyone else. So I think you've spoken about it a few times, and it's definitely a key for the weekend.
Absolutely, and it's not easy. You try and contradicting two things of running him off the 3 point line, putting him into the paint, but then making sure your foul discipline is good enough that, you know, you're walling up and you're just making it a contest and not putting him on the line for the 2 shot or 1 shot finish. So it's going to be so tough for Moe to get over the line, but, you know, anything could happen. Northeast. Now we have our Northeast men. It was Albury who defeated Wallent 90-88. I reckon I spoke about this game last week as sort of a decider of who suited up, and Jack Saunders laced up for Albury and he came in clutch.
Yeah, I know we spoke about, especially this conference, that it was pretty much a toss of the coin into who was going to win, and I think this Albury-Wallent game was exactly that. Going into overtime as well, another overtime game, so it was another cracker of a semi-final to be able to see. And as you mentioned, we talked about, you know, who would Albury suit up? That was probably going to be big for them, and then how Wallen would sort of counteract that. And, you know, a two-point game going into overtime is always a cracker.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you skip to the fourth and, you know, there's not much in it within these two teams. They're both living off threes and free throws. Yeah, Dion Stacey from the Panthers who got a two to take the lead to 3 points, I believe it was. Isaac Hutchinson brings it to a three-point game at the line. There you go, before my man Jack Saunders just decided to step up and do what he does best and just drain a three to tie it at 79. I don't know if people have actually seen this man shoot the ball, but if you carry a hand, he's just going to release it higher. And if you carry a stronger hand, it's just going to go higher. And it goes further behind his head, and his release is the exact same. It's just the arc of the ball, and it's the exact same shot every single time. This man can shoot the hell out of the ball. So, Wodonga, when you verse him in the grand final, be sure to just, well, run him off the three-point line. Just don't even let him shoot the ball. But that game-tying 3-79 pushes them over into overtime, and it was just as close and competitive. Albury to the quick lead before Wallen edging their way back. Many, many trips to the free-throw line. Ryan Phillippe was massive for Wallen in NBL 1 DP. He's made some incredible steps in recent years to the talent he's become. Jack Saunders again led the way with 24 points, with Liam Brady and Sam Hawkins with 15 and 14 points respectively.
Yeah, it was just a battle out there, I think. And you could see that, especially when you're talking about that overtime, it was many trips to the foul line. I think there was only a couple of buckets that were scored actually in game. So it was very interesting to have a look at, and would have been great to be able to see some vision of that sort of overtime, because I think it just would have been hectic, as you could imagine. And I'm sure there was plenty of crowd down in Wallen as well. Probably from both sides, I think Albury would have brought a big group to travel as well to make some noise and support their team. So just another cracker of a semi, and really just what we're looking for.
Absolutely. Now we look to the other game, and I think you've created sort of a phrase for this, and I don't know if I'm right, but is it a clash across the river of Albury and Wodonga?
I think you had that one, and I was calling it the cross-border battle.
The cross-border. I like either.
Obviously, you go across the bridge, but I'm calling it the cross-border battle.
Greg, what do you think? You're the tying vote here.
The Twin Cities?
The Twin Cities.
I don't think that's as fun.
Well, I think we're going to have to put out a poll or something like that to figure out what people like the most. But anyway, it was Wodonga who got over the line 78-69, defeating the Seymour Blasters. We had Tom O'Connor jump in last week for a little Q&A. A fantastic man. He didn't give us a hell of a lot of insight into the game ahead the weekend. But from what we gathered, there was a lot happening at these training sessions of just little things they could do, how disappointed they were last year, falling ever so short. They didn't want to be in that position again. Coaches, you know, antsy about what they could do. Tom was very, you know, calm and collected, wasn't he?
Yeah, very much so. I think that's sort of how he is. The minimal I've seen him on the court as well is quite sort of that calm person and tries to stand up. It was quite interesting. I watched this game unfold on Play HQ from Bendigo, and initially had seen the slow start by Seymour starting 12-18 down, and saw them start to build across their next two quarters, which made it a draw leading into the fourth. Seeing Seymour throughout the season, generally if they've started slow and they've been able to build, they've just kicked on with it, and sort of that's what I was expecting to see from them. But whether they haven't quite been able to kick on as they have, or Wodonga were prepared for it and were able to follow it with them, not really sure, as we haven't sort of seen the game itself. But it was just quite interesting to see them sort of stay with each other leading into that fourth. And it was really just where Wodonga were able to kick on and go a 29-20 last quarter and just kind of run away with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eric Miraflores with 20 points, Lockie Harvey with 17 respectively. Fantastic effort for the two of them. Harry Stones, I think, was sort of the rock that kept Seymour in the race. He's such a talented guy with the ball in his hands. He's got a really, really good IQ. I think he's going to be an amazing coach and player in the future. Paddy Green with 12 points fouled out as well. So whether he fouled out early or late, I'm not too sure. But that would have been a massive, massive out for Seymour. But as we look to the grand final, Albury versus Wodonga again, I think Jack Saunders is going to be huge here. But my sort of question will be around Wodonga with you know, the team list that they roll out. Are they going to have a full team list? Because I saw the last time these two played against each other, I think Frank Iguchi played, and he didn't suit up in this weekend that just was. He's qualified as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, Eric, Lockie Harvey, and if Frank suits up, I think this is going to be a very interesting game.
Yeah, it'll be super, super close, super exciting. We're hoping that both teams will be able to pull out their full squad, because we saw it was only, I think, 2 weeks ago when they had played each other in the last game of sort of the weekend, and it was, of course, a cracker with that 1 point battle again. So I'm hoping we're sort of able to see full squads and see something as exciting as that 1 point, because I think that will just be the cherry on top to what has been a very exciting season in the Northeast.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Jump to our women's side now with Myrtleford getting over the line 78, defeating Wallen at 64. Myrtleford continuing their undefeated streak. What was it, 8-0 throughout the regular season, now 9-0. Can they go one more this coming weekend? We'll have to find out. But a fantastic win defeating Wallen.
Yeah, obviously Myrtleford have been the team to beat in this conference and definitely have continued to show that into the semis. But also a massive credit to Wallen. We saw that they did only play the week before and the margin was a lot bigger than what it is now. So
yeah.
Wallen definitely did their homework and really tried, you know, to push Myrtleford as far as they could. And I think this score is quite promising for Wallen and they should be going home quite proud of how close they were able to get to Myrtleford, because I don't think that's happened too often throughout the season.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they've got so many pieces who can turn it on and off whenever they want. They had five players scoring in double figures this weekend. Georgia Reedy and Taylor Larkins with 15 apiece. They were two players that I believe were in the top five for scoring for the entire season and conference. So this team is just so hard to guard. There's so much happening across the board. You could say they're a team that wins by committee week in and week out. But no, Wallen were fantastic. Melissa Buckley leading all scorers with 23 points. It was fantastic to see.
Yeah, Melissa's been sort of the standout with this Wallen side and quite consistently getting into the sort of 20-point mark throughout the season. Just about every game that she's been a part of. Going back to your favourite saying of win by committee, I think that's very true when we're talking about Myrtleford. Like you're saying, five players in double digits, it really sort of makes it difficult to pick one player to sort of shut down, because then someone else is just going to come through and score. And when you've got five in double digits, I think that's massive. It's kind of who are you going to stop and what are you going to do with the others that are then going to continue to sort of get to the hoop?
Yeah, 100%. I think some things that I found here that were really interesting, though, apart from, you know, Myrtleford going 11-3 to start the fourth quarter, but Wallen may have gotten in foul trouble here. You had three players in with four fouls, one player fouled out, and then a few others on three fouls as well. Like, how much do we think this impacted the game here? I think, you know, fouls and taking people off in foul trouble, like, it's such a difficult thing to do as a coach. Do you trust them to leave them in and give them a few more minutes because they are such good players? Or do you take them out and reserve them and then put them on later when you need them the most? Like, it's such a difficult thing to navigate. But then the other thing I think was really interesting to see here, and I might be wrong because I definitely didn't see this on Play HQ, but Wallen didn't call a timeout for the entire game.
I actually have no words. Again, hopefully, we're assuming that this is factual, but you do never know.
Mm.
But that also could just be Wallen's style of play. I'm not going to lie, I haven't checked in terms of their timeouts throughout the season, and this might be a common theme with them that they don't maybe call many timeouts as a whole, and that could just be the way that, you know, their coach sort of rolls and lets the players do the thinking on the court. And I mean, it probably also depends what Myrtleford's doing in terms of timeouts as well. If Wallen feel like they might not need extra ones,
for
and
sure,
believe that their team are able to just sort of get over the hump that they're falling in, like you're saying, 11-3 in the fourth, sort of be assuming you'd be looking for a timeout there. But it could just be sort of their sort of plan throughout the whole season.
Yeah, such an interesting one. But we'll move on. Albury 63 defeated Wodonga 48. A big clash again across the board of the Twin Towers, whatever we want to call it. Albury, a massive start, 19-7 in the fourth. In the first quarter, a well-needed timeout by Wodonga. I think it was 3-15 with about 4 minutes left in that first quarter. So Albury had definitely put themselves in great stead immediately.
Yeah, Albury really just came out and sort of stamped their authority quite early. You would think that Wodonga sort of would be ruining their start in that first quarter. Going down 19-7 kind of really sets you on the back foot. And I think a big part of this, they were probably just missing their scoring power.
Yeah.
You look, no Elizabeth Murphy suits up. She's been, you know, mid to high 20s quite consistently throughout the season. Molly Moylan, who's also in the last few weeks been putting up, you know, in the 30s. I know she had a 40 the other week as well. So that's taking out a lot of scoring power for them. And I think if you add even just an Elizabeth Murphy, who's been in the team pretty much every game, you're adding, you know, 20 points. And look where that would then put that score.
Well, I mean, they played each other way back in round three. Elizabeth Murphy had 25 and Wodonga got the win. So I think you're absolutely right there. You're definitely onto something there, as they only suited up 8 players for their night. So, you know, if they did play, it would have been a very big difference. It might have been a different scoreline at the end of the game. So you're absolutely right. I think that does make a massive difference for both teams and definitely for Wodonga. But we look to the grand final, Myrtleford versus Albury. A simple question here, Sarah, is Myrtleford gonna finish undefeated for the entire season?
Look, on paper, you're assuming yes, but I think you can't underestimate Albury. I think they've been building the last few weeks, and it showed obviously on Saturday night as well when they were able to defeat what is a very strong Wodonga side as well. So I think Albury are definitely going to push them. I'm just not sure where it's going to go from there. Will Myrtleford be able to sort of react to being pressured and be able to keep going? Will Albury sort of be able to keep persisting with the pressures throughout the whole game, both defensively, but also they need to put the score on the board to sort of really make sure they're impacting Myrtleford?
Yeah, I mean, the two times they came up against each other, it was Myrtleford obviously got both 33 points in the first outing and then 14 in the second. So, you know, that margin did get dramatically smaller there. But, you know, where do they get over the line here? I'm not too sure.
Interesting to note, Ted, Albury have been here, done this. This is going for a three-peat.
Yes.
So since Albury came back into the competition in 2022, they've won both titles. So three-peat on the cards, have been here, done that. I know they've gone 4-4 this year. I know they're maybe a player or two missing than what they've had in the past. But, Myrtleford deserving of the record they've had. But don't discount Albury in the experience.
Absolutely not. Grand finals, anything can happen. It's going to be super exciting. I believe that one is in Albury as well. So a home court advantage.
Yeah, and with that one, firstly, we just want to shout out to Wallen for allowing the games to be moved. They are now going to be in Albury in the Lauren Jackson Centre. So big congratulations to Albury for being able to host, but also a massive thank you needs to go out to Wallen for enabling this to happen and sort of provide the associations involved not as much travel as some of them may have seen, especially when we're talking sort of about the very northeast region with your Myrtlefords, and obviously Wodonga and Albury are quite close, but it also does a lot for Myrtleford as well. So massive thank you obviously to Wallen, but big congratulations to Albury for then being able to host it as well.
100%. Southwest Conference, we jump straight into our men. It was Horsham who defeated Millicent 84-79. Super interesting here just to see immediately before we even get started. It was a 12-man bench for Horsham and then 6 for Millicent.
Yeah, super interesting. I wish I probably had a look a little bit further. I know SA Country had their under-18s championship, so I'm not 100% sure on the sort of ages of Millicent in their team and if anyone sort of was impacted with that and sort of had to pick one or the other. Very much could have been the case. I know it was a little bit of the case in the women's. But obviously, Horsham at home always going to have as much manpower as they can, and I know the crowd they would have had would have been ginormous as well. But also, to get it within 5 with a Horsham who's been quite unstoppable this season, Millicent really need to hold their head high for that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they made an awesome run in the third quarter, 10-1. I think it forced a Horsham timeout. They called 2 timeouts in the second half where Millicent made some serious runs and definitely made it interesting. But I think it was that 30-14 second point quarter, which sort of kept Horsham in really good stead. They were 11-0 at one point in that second. So Horsham, I think, whether they just, you know, continue to rotate through with fresh legs and really force Millicent to play quicker, I'm not too sure. Millicent used their timeouts very, very well. By the looks of it, resting their bodies, having only six guys, they called a timeout in every quarter, sort of in that middle mark. So without having the subs that they probably would usually have, they use that timeout very strategically, making sure that they reserve some when they needed them. But also, you know, using them when they did. Nelson Forbes and Harry Mills, two guys that play NBL 1 South for Mount Gambier, had massive, massive outings here. I think these two guys deserve huge recognition in this game. They did fall ever so short, but 36 points for Nelson Forbes and 25 for Harry Mules. These are two guys that kept Millicent in the battle consistently throughout this entire game. They both had their own spotlight here and there of scoring multiple times in a row, but they almost did it themselves to take down Horsham.
Yeah, they really made sure that this was a match. And I think when you look at, you know, Millicent being down by 24 points at halftime, then they were able to bring it back to only a 5-point game with six men. Like, that's a big achievement. And then, obviously, when you're looking at Horsham, they have three players all on 18 points with McKenzie, Frew and Livingston. It's kind of, who do you stop there? You know, no one scoring massive points as such for Millicent, but it's just consistent scoring and from multiple players.
100%. I mean, you can only do so much. If these guys are scoring, you know, close to 20 points, you got to sort of just pick and choose, and you can't really do much about it. Basketball is such a team sport, and you can't just allow one-on-one defense to you know, limit scores all the time. You're going to have to take something away that's going to give up something on the other side of the floor. So a massive effort for Millicent to get as close as they did, but Horsham were just too good. I think the team to beat in this entire conference, I think they dropped just the one game for the season, I believe. So the eight, I think it was the 8-1 record, I believe. 8-1, 9-1, I think it was. So Horsham are in great stead leading into this grand final, and they will be facing Mount Gambier, who defeated Warrnambool by just 1 point.
Yeah, another absolute cracker of a match. Warrnambool obviously making the trip up to Mount Gambier. Had really been in sort of those top one and two spots for majority of the season. It was sort of just when things evened out towards the end where Mount Gambier sort of jumped them for that home semi. But boy, did they make it a match.
Yeah, 100%. I want to try and talk our way through this because I want to jump straight to the fourth quarter. As we have some awesome talent coming out of Warrnambool, some serious guys that are going to be fantastic for that Warrnambool community. But you had about 3 minutes left, man. Gambier were up six. Harry McGorman with back-to-back threes to tie the game at 81 for Warrnambool. Next possession, he follows it up with a go-ahead bucket. I believe it was an and-one. Because there had to be a timeout in between the shot and the free throw. So I reckon it was an and-one. I mean, Gambier called it in between the free throw. So no doubt they would have had to draw up a play in between all of that. So Harry McGorman had his special little moment there with his back-to-back threes and then the and-one. But man, Gambier must have drawn up something very swift for Toby DeWitt to have the go-ahead bucket there. And then it was Simon Beckford again from Mount Gambier who pushed it over the line 84 to 85. It was an awesome sort of sequence here. I would have loved to have seen it live and see what actually happened. But you get to the end there. There was a timeout by Warrnambool. You would think there would have been something drawn up there, whether it went to McGorman, whether it went to, you know, Riley Nicholson, you don't know. But it was a fantastic effort. McGorman finished with 24 points to finish the game. Simon led all scorers with 27. Mount Gambier, I believe they were champions last year, so they're back again to try and go back-to-back or for three. Back-to-back-to-back, three in a row.
Yeah, and we've actually managed to set up a repeat of last year with Horsham and Mount Gambier.
There you go.
This was what I was bringing to the table, but you've all just swapped me. So I'll just continue to move myself to the
side. No, go on. Go on.
No, no, you've literally covered it off. I look forward to getting down there. They're going for a three-peat. It's a grand final rematch. This is an echo in the room on the podcast.
Well, I mean, it probably is the best two teams that have come out of this conference to face each other. It makes perfect sense for the two of them to be there. Can Mount Gambier do it? Can they beat Horsham? Like we said earlier, Horsham were probably the team to beat for this entire conference. But the trip down to Portland is going to be so exciting.
Let me contribute here something. So
go on.
The one loss that Mount Gambier has had this year was to Horsham.
Yep.
Horsham's one loss they had was the opening game of the season to Millicent, the team they just got over the line in the semi. So to me, this is all built up to be the exact game that we all wanted. They are two of the powerhouses of this competition. Interesting to note, last time, 90-84 was the scoreline. Horsham getting up with a 26-point last quarter. Austin McKenzie for Horsham, 23 points. Mitch Martin, 13 points. But it was Mika Livingston with 31 points that was the big difference in the game. And, of course, there was the four key players that scored for Mount Gambier last time around. Simon Burkfield with 19, Kyle Tippin with 18, Moni McCoy with 16, and Taj Brumby with 17. So plenty of scorers. Should be a fantastic game there at Portland. Are we at a sellout yet for the men's game? The women's certainly sold out. The men's must be close to a sellout, I'd imagine, down there.
I haven't quite checked today, but I know when we were talking yesterday, it was 4 tickets left. So I'm going to assume those 4 tickets have been sold. So I'm going to back that it's a sellout.
Are we getting a spot? Like, it's been known in the past that the BV staff have rolled up and said, sorry, there's no entrance. This is a fair drive we're doing. We get a spot, right?
That's just you specifically, though, isn't it? Yeah, I think Greg's just being robbed a bit.
That might sound like a you problem. I've definitely sorted my seat for myself. You might need to fight off a couple of people in the crowd for that.
Well, I think we do need to make it known that we are very excited to see Portland host these grand finals as well. An awesome community, a basketball community. So it's going to be so exciting to see what happens. And no doubt that the two of you are going to come back with some awesome stories.
Look, it's been discussed as to whether Sarah and I are going down the same car. No, it's good for her not to. I think a 5-hour drive down there is good for her. But no, I'm actually taking the opportunity to go down early tomorrow on Friday evening and catch up with a few associations along the drive down there to Portland. But you're right, I'm really pleased that Sarah, the Country Commission, Basque Victoria have put the Southwest Grand Final at Portland. It is a smaller venue, but Portland is a very, very passionate basketball community. It's obviously a terrific women's team that we'll talk about in a second, but the media coverage, the interest from the newspapers, interest from radio through the region, it demonstrates this is a great move for the sport and for the region, and hopefully if it can provide any assistance to in the near future, getting more courts and a bigger facility for Portland and helping them grow the game further, and that's a win for everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it yourself, they're going to be hosting one of their own as Portland defeated Warrnambool in the women's conference. So no doubt it's awesome to hear that game's a sellout. It's going to be fantastic to be able to support their own as they will be taking on Millicent in the grand final. But Portland were definitely the team to beat all year long. Warrnambool gave them a genuine fight. They fell ever so short. A late run in the second by Portland, pushing them out to a 38-21 point lead. The Coasters led by 13 at the break, but it was a 22-13 second quarter, which gave Portland that really, really nice cushion as we lead into that second half. Warrnambool had a fantastic run in that third quarter. They had something to absolutely fight for. They were scoring in spurts, great little runs within that 10-minute. But Portland were able to just retaliate, constantly scoring little spurts themselves, that 16 for the quarter themselves. So it wasn't like this was a massive, massive turnaround in the third, but Warrnambool gave themselves something.
Yeah, and big props to Warrnambool for being able to do that as well. We were talking about how, Warrnambool gets in on a head-to-head to Colac, and then they're coming up against a very strong Portland, who are also the reigning champions from last year as well. So to be able to, you know, keep the scoreline to what it is, but also be able to test them, especially in that third quarter where they actually won that quarter 22-16. I think big props to them for being able to sort of really push this Portland side and make them earn their spot in the grand final.
100%. I mean, Millie Jennings, Alana Strom, and Summer Millard are three of the best to come up in this conference. They're going to be three players to definitely watch out for in this grand final this coming weekend. But no, Warner will deserve all the credit. Lara Clark was fantastic, finishing with 14 points. She did have four fouls, so whether that impacted her a little bit, not too sure. But we jump to the other game. Millicent defeated Mangambia 62-60. A six-team strong Millicent prevailed, taking over Mangambia, progressing to the grand final. Was a massive win for them.
Yeah, like I had mentioned, obviously in the men's match with Millicent, I could definitely see, knowing roughly who's generally been suiting up for this Millicent team, that they were going in a bit undermanned with only the six players. So obviously with SA's country championships as well. But, you know, to both teams, I'm sure Mount Gambier will probably also impact it as well, being that they normally run a younger group as well. Both teams really, you know, did what they could with the team that they had. And, you know, 2 points in sort of two very good teams, it's just what you want to keep seeing in finals.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you look in the second quarter of a 24-17 split there with Millicent taking that one out. Yeah, Poppy Venu scored 8 of her 22 in that quarter. And then Lacey Haynes also scored 8 of her 11 in that second. So a massive, massive turnaround for Millicent there. They led at the half up 3. No timeouts were taken in the first half, I believe. But you look to the fourth, and again, Millicent down there. But then Mangambia got up 6 just before a late charge by Millicent to get over the line. 12-9 in that fourth quarter. So very, very close, Nick, game. Just the 2 points to finish it. But it was Lauren Van Eden with the go-ahead bucket, as we see on the play-by-play. A massive, massive effort there. I believe it was just a and one, I think.
Yeah.
So, huge, huge game there. Huge little segment there as well. Would have loved to have that on camera to see actually what came out. But it was fantastic to see, and awesome to see Millicent jumping into this grand final.
Yeah, and of course, I know you did mention Poppy Venn earlier. She's just been so consistent and really stood out for this Millicent side. Again, another player who's, you know, scoring sort of high teens to mid-20s week in, week out. She's really just tried to pull this Millicent team along with her. And I think, you know, top scoring with 22 again just has shown how far she's come. I know she's had some experience with Mount Gambier in NBL 1 as well. And I think for a young player, that's really paying off for her this season in CBL.
100%. Well, they were the champions back in 2022. And I think what's really interesting is Poppy Venn played in that final. She played alongside her sister. She played for her dad. Her dad was a coach at that point in time. And her best friend, Eden Esseby, was there as well. So awesome to see the two of them back, Poppy and Edie, back again playing in this grand final. But without the sister, without the dad, can she do it again?
This one will be super interesting. I think we've talked about Portland's definitely sort of been that team to beat this season. But Millicent have always found a way to grind through. Of course, you see this two-point win. They've really sort of in matches, it's been tight, and they've just found the way to get the win.
Mm.
And I think that's going to go really far for them in this grand final. And as we've talked about in other games, it'll be about if they're able to stick with Portland and able to put the pressure on and how Portland are going to be able to handle that. And if Millicent can put it on for the four quarters, like what's going to happen, you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be super interesting, but we jump to our Northwest Conference where we have our grand finals. I will say those were our three semifinals, so grand finals all this weekend for those three conferences. But we jump to the Northwest Conference, two grand finals over a Bendigo Stadium. We start with our men. It was Castle Maine who got the grand final win 76, defeating Bendigo 55. A massive win by the Cannons to take out the Braves. one we discussed last week quite thoroughly about who was going to take it out, which player was going to be the key piece. You had Josiah Patterson, who was a season MVP for this conference. So a massive congratulations to him. And he was dynamite in this game as well.
Yeah, firstly, I do also just want to thank Bendigo Basketball Association for also being able to host the grand final. They were fantastic to work with and put on a fantastic, you know, sort of 4 hours, I think, by the time we finished. It was just great across the board, being able to help us with our live streams, court announcers, everything. They just made it the spectacle that we love to see in CBL, and I know all three associations involved are very grateful for that. So a massive thank you for them to start off with. But also, you know, Josiah, he'd sort of been the guy all season. Saw him take out season MVP, and then he stands up in the grand final and is also named grand final MVP as well. He was just big at the right times. I think there was probably points where Bendigo tried to shut him down, and then sort of a couple other players got going in this Castlemaine team. I think Aiden Brom, not on the stats in terms of points, but I was talking to someone and you could count the amount of steals he got. I think in one sort of short space he'd gotten 3. He was just making sure that this was going to be a battle and that he was going to do the most he could for this Castlemaine team. Like I said, not getting points on the board, but doing the right things. If you're able to watch the game, you would have seen the impact that he had. And then obviously you have Chris Hogan as well stepping up. There's just so many people stepping up for this Castlemaine side.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think it was probably the scoreline we really expected. I mean, it was 26-25 at halftime. So a massive effort in that second half there for Castlemaine. 20 in the third and 22 in the fourth. But these games are so interesting because, you know, the nerves start to grow. It gets a bit antsy in the stadium because every single point matters, especially when it's not clicking over consistently. I mean, 25 and 26, that's, you would almost assume that's just a really good quarter scoreline. Yeah. But I do want to ask, Greg, we have Chris Hogan, who played in this game. He had 15 points here. He's a legend of basketball in that sort of area, and probably Bendigo specifically, I guess.
Look, I think this reflects the role that Bendigo plays in the wider community. So Castlemaine, full credit to Castlemaine. It's outstanding, a great achievement for them and their association, and probably get overlooked for the amount of players over the years that have come through the Castlemaine program because they go on to play at Bendigo, and this is what makes the CBL fantastic. This is why I've come, as I've learnt more about it in more recent times, I've come to really love it because it is a chance for people like Chris Hogan and others to be able to play for these associations that don't get in the limelight as much.
Mm.
And, you know, I certainly don't want to drop anyone from Bendigo in it, but they, while they weren't necessarily, you know, naturally they'd like to have won it, from a senior role, they're able to recognise how fantastic this is for our sport and for Castlemaine. And you're right, Chris Hogan is a legend of basketball in that region. But for him to be involved with Castlemaine and Josiah obviously leading the way through the whole season, obviously on the night, it is a great achievement. So that's why I think CBL is fantastic, to see some of these associations get an opportunity to be recognised on a higher level.
100%. Well, I think Jake Lloyd, I guess, is another guy that's coming through the ranks as well. I believe he plays NBL 1 for Bendigo. He's been influential throughout his career thus far. I think he's still quite young as a player, but someone is coming through the ranks. He only had 6 points in this grand final win, but, you know, someone that probably looks up to Chris quite a lot, being from Castlemaine as well. So awesome to see guys like him as well jumping in and playing in the CBL competition.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic, it's a good thing, what the CBL is all about, and great to see the smaller associations taking it to the big dogs and collecting a win here and there. It's a good result.
100%, absolutely. We jump to our women's side here, the grand final between Bendigo and Kyneton. It was Bendigo 110 to Kyneton 55. It was an incredible performance by Bendigo, no doubt. To score 110 in a grand final is massive in front of their home crowd as well. I think we have to give Kyneton as much credit as possible here, even though they did did fall short in this final, but a massive effort for them. They had a fantastic season, not taking anything away from this Bendigo Braves women's side, but absolutely huge credit to Kaiden for getting there.
Yeah, obviously, massive congratulations to Bendigo. We've talked about them sort of being the team to beat throughout the season. Yes, they did take one loss, but I think we've talked about it before, potentially a little bit of a clash with a Spirit game and things like that there. But
yep,
also credit to Kaiten. We talked about last week how they had to grind Mildura down to make the grand final in the first place. And
yeah,
I spoke to their head coach before the game, Ash Clark, and we just sort of caught up for a little bit of a chat while the girls were warming up. And we sort of hit the same notes as what we discussed on the podcast. So I was feeling quite good about myself that we're on the same wavelength. He was talking about, you know, they just need to pressure them early and pressure them throughout the whole game. And he also said he'd be interested to see how Bendigo would go if they were able to sort of commit to the pressure throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Kaiten probably didn't start off like Ash would have liked. Weren't able to sort of hit the scoreboard really well, really early, and put that pressure on Bendigo. But they also didn't stop trying, and you saw that through the whole game. Everyone was just having a crack. Again, I spoke about last week their mix of youth and experience and the amount of talk that those experienced players are giving you, the youth players on the court as well, not just, you know, coming from the coach. They look like a really good team, and that if they, especially with the youth they have coming up, I think if they can keep putting work into them and using players like a Michelle Fletcher to give off her experience to them and keep, you know, keep teaching them and things like that, they'll be a team that will continue to challenge, you know, a Bendigo in years to come.
Yeah, 100%. I think culture is a massive thing and probably an underrated thing that a lot of people in this community don't talk about enough. The culture actually goes a long way, both on and off the floor. You have all these times in games where you huddle and have a chat about things, and the ability to connect and communicate with each other at a deeper level. If you have that culture, it makes things so much easier. You know how to play with each other. You know what each other are going to do. You're able to hear something critical and not take it personally, that it's just something you need to do and need to change. So I think you're right. I think Kaiten have an awesome future. Bendigo were just too good on this day. Piper Dunlop, I believe, was the MVP, season MVP?
No, so Piper Dunlop was our grand final MVP. And she was fantastic, obviously finishing with the 19 points, just the one behind Jessica Smith, who was the top scorer. But what she was able to do, especially on defense, I wish I could count the amount of blocks that she got, because you know, you should get a couple and you're like, yep, cool. But then I think in the final quarter, I don't know how many she got, but she was just blocking them left, right and centre, and really sort of put herself on the map for this team. Season MVP as well, we had Poppy Blanche. I believe she was the MVP from last season, just thinking back to some earlier conversations. But again, another player who was big, had 16 in the game as well, but just her work throughout the whole season, definitely a deserved winner.
Absolutely. Well, someone who's a deserved winner is yourself, Sarah. You've had a fantastic season of CBL. You've got one more weekend left of what is it, six grand finals at three different venues. It's been an amazing season. So credit to you as well. I'm sure the associations have appreciated everything you've done, all the twists and turns that comes with running a competition. It is not easy, and I'm sure Greg has been very appreciative of that as well. So fantastic season for you. One last weekend as we get some grand finals underway.
Yeah, super exciting, obviously heading into the last weekend. Make sure if you can't get to games that are near you and you want to tune into what should be some cracking basketball, all the live streams for all the games will be on the Basketball Victoria YouTube channel. So all our women's games will be starting at 5:15 and then go into their presentations, and then also leading into the men's matches that will be starting at 8 p.m. So if you can't get to Albury for the northeast, Pakenham for the Gippsland, or Portland, of course, for the southwest, make sure you're jumping in on there to keep an eye on things. And if, you know, you're busy working, things like that, also having a look at My Hoops or Play HQ, and you can see play-by-plays and quarter-by-quarter scores as well to make sure that you're keeping up with all the action that's going on.
Fantastic. There you have it. Leagues HQ podcast. We will catch you all next week for some grand final reviews. We'll see you later.